Hey everyone, welcome to the Broke Girl Society podcast. I'm Christina. Thank you so much for listening in. Today I am joined by Tara from the Ambitious Addicts podcast, and we are together doing a joint podcast episode, and we're interviewing our friend Lindsay. And, you know, I know a lot of people shy away from early recovery conversations, but if you know me, I don't. And I'm thankful Tara brought me on when I wasn't even quite 30 days in recovery or just at 30 days in recovery. And it really kind of, you know, made an impact in how recovery would look like for me. And so I think having these conversations with someone in early recovery, it gives you a better idea of the emotional roller coaster that we go through in those early days. And I know people shy away from it because you just don't know what's going to happen, right? She could go back to gambling, or she could have a very solid recovery from day one. So I appreciate Lindsay coming on, sharing her vulnerability, her emotions in the early days of her recovery. I believe she was 72 days when we recorded this, and it was a good conversation to have, and I'm grateful. So let me give my shout out to Gamban for sponsoring the podcast, for being such a great company. If you're someone who struggles with online gambling, go to Gamban.com, download their software. It's a very, very small fee monthly. Very small fee yearly. There are, I think, 5 or 6 states now that will cover it for you. So you are welcome to email me and I'll get you that information. But download that software, block those sites, and give yourself a good start to recovery. So let's roll on into this episode. Hey, everyone. I'm Christina from the Broke Girl Society podcast.
And I'm Tara from the Ambitious Addicts podcast.
And we are doing a joint interview with our friend Lindsay, who is 72 days in recovery. Thank you, Lindsay. I knew it was past 70. I just didn't know the exact number. And we just decided we'd team up and just have a conversation with her.
Hi, Lindsay.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
You can be honest. Are you nervous?
I don't think so. I think I feel really comfortable with both of you, so that helps a lot.
We try our best. So tell us about, like, just tell us a little bit about your story. I don't know why Tara's laughing at me. It's
the mood.
I don't know. It's just been one.
It's a mood.
Yeah, it's the mood. So we'll just bring it back to you because this episode's about you. You want to just give us share with us what you're comfortable sharing with about your story.
Yeah. So I appreciate it. So yes. Yeah, so my last bet was 12/30 of 21. You know, it's funny looking back at that. So 72 days ago, and it seems like forever, you know, that I haven't been to a casino, when in reality it's been 2 months, a little bit over. And, you know, I was thinking about the other day about how there'd probably be like so many new games and stuff. Like, it's just still like crazy to think how much it would change, because I wasn't like an everyday gambler. I went, you know, on the weekends usually. So I was like a Friday night, you know, Saturday night, or even, you know, payday. And through the years, you know, sometimes I get paid every week, or my husband and I, are sometimes every 2 weeks. So yeah, that really depended. But, you know, sometimes it would be a couple weeks and there'd be so much new stuff, right? And I just was thinking about the other day, like, I wonder how updated it is. Not that that makes me want to go. It just was just an interesting thought that kind of crossed my mind. Anyway, so let me go back in time. So I've been gambling for probably about 12 years or so, I'd say. I was kind of looking back, trying to pinpoint it, kind of a blur a little bit. I was actually talking to my husband about it, and he was just like, you know, trying to help me kind of remember some of, you know, kind of that journey or when it started. And I just wanted to kind of share his answer, because I think it's very interesting, right? He was just like, well, you hated gambling. I was just like, yeah, I did. Because he actually would go very like randomly with a buddy, like after golfing or something of like that. And he would bring home, you know, little like small wins and stuff. And that was fun, you know, and it'd be like, well, that's cool, you know, keep it up or something like that. And then, you know, I was never interested ever in going. And then we decided to plan a trip to Vegas. And he said that's when it all started, is Vegas, you know, kind of influenced a lot of the gambling. It didn't turn into a problem right away, but it definitely created this illusion of like happiness, or I don't know, you know, I mean, for most people who've been to Vegas would understand, you know,
like a high on life kind of feeling.
Yeah, exactly. Like
party that never stops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can gamble. I mean, you can do anything you want and it's completely acceptable. That's the thing. You don't have to feel like stupid or out of the ordinary. Anyway, so I live in Michigan, so Vegas is not, you know, a quick trip by any means. So we, you know, we would plan, you know, our first vacation there was super fun. We actually stayed way too long and had no idea. Like, you know, I think we stayed for like 5 days and we were like, oh my gosh, this is so long. And then anyways, I've probably been to Vegas like 7 times and I would just keep my gambling in Vegas. I'd come home. It wouldn't affect me in any way. It was kind of just like something where I was like, okay, you know, that's kind of my thing there. And I never felt like it was a problem. And this was probably the first like 3 or 4 trips. And then, I'm not being dramatic, and then it changed.
I wish I was like crafty and could bring in the music like dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. And this is what my husband says too. This is when it all changed. Is we're there. We got just gotten there, and you know, it was like pretty late, like 10 o'clock their time. So the, you know, my time that would be like 1 in the morning. Anyway, we're tired, and we're like, okay, you know, we'll just go look around a little bit. I was playing this game. I'll never, ever, ever forget it, and I remember putting an amount of money in and went through all of that money and was like, this is such crap. Like, I didn't win anything. This is awful. I don't even know why I'm still playing this game. I hit a bonus, didn't win anything except that last spin, the very last one. And I won a jackpot. And it was quite a bit of money for a 25-year-old, I don't know. And this is the very beginning of my trip. And it was like the best feeling ever. I know that I went back to the hotel room and my husband and I, like, we threw, like, I rolled around in the money in the hotel bed. Because it was the most money I've ever had, you know, or cash, you know. I remember the feelings I had of, you know, just, like so much joy, but then also like so much anxiety. I was like so afraid of blow it all. And I remember thinking that back then, and this is before I really, you know, knew I had a problem, is I was so worried about losing it all and not bringing me home. And that whole weekend, I shit you not, I left with more like that amount of money. We were able to spend I won like 3 jackpots that weekend. Like, it was just insane. It just was absolutely insane. We come home. It was probably right before Christmas-ish. Come home. Go to the casino home.
Wait, had you ever done that before?
Husband wins. Like, started going at to home. The casino at home. You know, that's where it's a little blurry for me. I believe so. But not to the extent of like, how do I say it? Like, just as how much? Like, we came home and went to the casino every day for like 7 days.
After that trip?
Yeah. After that trip. And that's when it, I think that's just like when it kept, well, and then so right after we got home, husband wins a jackpot on the same game at the home casino for a little bit less than how much I won. And it was like, whoa, oh my gosh, this is easy. Right. I've heard that so many times, you know, in meetings and stuff.
Did you think it was a sign?
I thought it was just great. I don't know. I was just so, I think, you know, I think looking back, it's really hard to say what was happening, you know. I think it was so innocent at first. And then, you know, and it being both my husband and I, like, you know, I've not met anybody, or at least they haven't shared where, like, it's kind of similar to my story of like their significant other went with them and they can walk away, but you can't. And maybe that's just they haven't shared and that's totally fine, you know? And so I think it's always been a, like a burden, but also like, what is the word? Like a burden. It's not a burden and a curse. It's the same thing, but like a good thing, because I haven't ever had to like worry about hiding it from him, you know? I'm thinking, I feel like I'm going off topic of my story, but you know, like I've never, I sit and listen into like meetings with people and so many people, you know, got caught or, you know, hid it from their significant other. And I've never had to do that. You know, it's always, mine was always, maybe he just didn't really know how much money we were spending. You know, he was always doing it too, but I was always a driving force. But anyway, I'll finish my story, but that's definitely, I mean, that is part of my story.
I want to go back to that too.
Yeah. I'd love to dig more into that. But so that, you know, that happened. And then I think I really truly, if I was going to say, oh, that's the point of no return for me, I kind of feel like I would label that as like a significant point in my gambling. Now, to be honest, I don't remember what year that was, you know, how far back. I mean, at least, I would say at least 8-9 years. So then it just kind of progressed. It was fun and everything. I started going alone a lot. You know, my husband worked first shift. I worked second shift. So I worked in the restaurant industry. So, you know, back then I used to drink a lot too. We used to, you know, friends of mine would go with me. It was very like social. Then it, you know, it was a slow progression of like turning into just like me going by myself, not ever drinking, just going by myself to like, excuse me, have a release after work. And, you know, that's when it really started to get bad, you know, is when I was going by myself. You know, my husband is wonderful, but he, you know, he always just was like, whatever. He never stopped me, you know, but we would still go together by, you know, we'd go to by myself all the time because I wasn't accountable. I didn't have to be up in the morning and, you know, I could go whatever time I wanted and stuff like that. And I did the money. So, you know, I think he always just trusted that there was enough money for me to be doing that, you know? So he had his things, I had mine. So I bet about 2015 is when I really realized I had a problem and, it all just kind of like started to come down on me. I remember like I would go to the casino and sit there in the parking lot and go, okay, you either pay your, energy bill or you go try to win more so you can pay that and some other bills. But if you spend this money, you won't be able to pay your energy bill. You know, I just remember that one specifically. You know, I was always robbing Peter to pay Paul, you know, juggling credit cards of like cash advances and stuff like that. And, you know, it just started then to feel normal. So I had this breakdown, and I finally told my mom, and, you know, she knew, you know, people always knew we were gamblers. But, you know, no one knew the extent of it. So, I was driving home one day after spending way too much money. And, you know, told my mom, kind of broke down and told her everything. At that point, I started promising the world of recovery, right? I'm going to go to GA. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do all these things. I'm going to call the hotline. I'm going to exclude myself. Can you please bail me out? You know, of course she did. You know, she was just so worried about me. I did all the things that I said I would do. I tried GA. I excluded myself from every casino within like 100 miles of myself. Cause I was like really super broken. And like, remember they took a picture of me and I probably looked like a mugshot. Like it was so like, I'm thinking, really, you're going to take a picture of me? Like, this is like the worst day of my life right now. And I had to go into every single casino, you know, nothing was online. I had to go in, walk in, talk to security, you know, it was awful, but necessary. So I did all that. I worked full time. I had a couple jobs. So, you know, I had already graduated from college and everything. But I was, you know, balancing, you know, working full time, being married and, this gambling addiction. So anyways, my family has always been really supportive, but I don't think that they've always understood how to be, you know, like gambling addiction is not something they've ever dealt with before, you know, especially my family, you know, nobody gambles really. You know, nobody really drinks even, like addiction isn't like something that they've ever had to deal with. So I think, you know, bailouts were the only, like, and for me too, that's the only way I felt like they could help me, right? Is just by bailing me out of my financial issues. And I know now that that didn't help me. Well, it did at the time, you know, but like, it didn't do me any favors as in teaching me to like sit with, you know, what has happened. But like, I'm so grateful that they helped me because I mean, I believe everything happens for a reason. I wouldn't be here today, right? And learned all these things if they hadn't. So, you know, I feel like everyone in my family has helped bail me out at some point. You know, I owed a lot of money. And so did my husband on different credit cards. I can't even tell you how many we had. I consolidated loans. You know, I would consolidate. I think this car we had, like, I don't even know how, like, we owed so much money on it. Like, it's definitely not worth that much, you know? And it's just like, we kept adding and adding more value to it. I don't know why the bank ever did that, but it was just so unreasonable, especially for like, you know, I worked in the restaurant. I didn't have, you know, my husband had a decent job, you know, but it was just so in over our heads. Anyways, multiple family members helped bail me out at different times. And, you know, during all this, you know, I would stop gambling and then I would go back. And I would stop gambling and I would go back. I was never ready to stop, you know, back then. Now that I'm at where I am now, like looking back, I told everybody I was because I felt like, well, if they're going to help me, like I need to show them that I'm like ready to commit, you know, but like inside I wasn't ready. So lots of, you know, relapsing, you know, thinking that, you know, I'm done. I can't tell how many times have I said, walked out of that casino, I'm never gambling again. Eventually same I girl. Decided I'm, well, sorry, what was that?
I'm like, same girl, same.
Yeah. I eventually stopped saying it. I'm like, I'm never saying I'm never gambling again, because I don't even trust that myself that that's true. So a lot of roller coaster of stopping, going, a lot of winning, feeling good with it, right? Leveling out. Oh, you know, it helped take care of situations. A lot of getting loan, you know, borrowing money, robbing Peter to pay Paul to make things okay, or to continue to even gamble, you know. So many, many years of that. And so after that whole self-exclusion, borrowing money from family members to help, I think, you know, there are times it's really hard to pinpoint of how long I stopped. I think probably at the most, maybe 6 months or so. I can't remember fully, but I was completely practicing just abstinence. You know, I wasn't in recovery. I wasn't trying to make myself better. I was just trying to stay away, you know? And those thoughts were always there. I was just making myself so busy that I didn't have time to gamble, you know? So I did go to therapy and that helped a lot. But it's I feel she never really dug into the gambling, you know? I think she was wonderful and helped me through other issues, but I remember at one time, and I was honest with her, you know, I mean, maybe not 100%, but I felt I was pretty honest about that I was still gambling, or, you know, and I wouldn't tell other people that. And, you know, at one point I feel she was just kind of well, I just don't think there's anything else I can do for you. And I was just okay. I don't know. It was kind of weird, you know. I just don't think she knew what to do with me, because I came off so okay. I'm fine.
We both are really familiar with that.
Yeah, very much so.
I was going to say, after a lot of conversations I know we've all had, you know, I'm fine. I've got it. Yeah. So, you know, that's how I came off to people. And, you know, I think people just thought I was fine. You know, if they're not familiar with gambling addiction or addiction in general, I mean, you know, they're probably going to be like, well, she's fine, I guess, you know, and that's how it seemed like. So, you know, I don't ever think back and go, oh, she was, you know, didn't help me. She did in many other ways. I just don't think she knew what to do with me, but, you know, I had some other experiences. I did go to GA. It was an uncomfortable experience for me. But I wasn't in the right mindset back then. You know, I was in I'm fine. You know, I don't need this. I can do it myself. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't fair to those people. You know, they were wonderful. There was only, I think there was 3 other people in that meeting that I went to, and they were all much older than me. And it wasn't very, not that they weren't nice, but they weren't arms wide open, you know, ooh, a new person. Let's get them comfortable, you know? So, you know, just timing and stuff, but, you know, that didn't really work out. I did try it, so I was proud of that, but I also did.
And let's clarify, you're a hugger, and in the GA rooms, that's not allowed.
What are you talking about?
I just want to clarify totally that.
I want to come to your room, Tara.
Yeah, mine is not.
Might get you all to come to Minnesota. Let's go. I was thinking the other day about all my friends I've made, you know, now that we're in this virtual recovery world, and why can't I have an in-person meeting with them?
Yeah. No kidding. Wouldn't that be amazing?
That would be the best.
I don't know why some rooms are some rooms just have that, I guess, kind of that 13th step issue, and maybe I think that probably plays a lot into it. And just some, you know, some are just
with all the women in my room, the women hug the women. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But in most rooms, it's male dominated. Yeah. And that's just they're not huggers in general, probably anyway. So I'm not exactly sure where that rule came from. And I think every GA room is probably going to be very individualized. So
I don't want to come across to anybody saying it's not okay, but yeah.
Well, I know, Tara, I said in one of my meetings, Christine, I think you were in the meeting and I don't remember what I was talking about, but there was like this group is like all men, right? I think you're, part of that group, but, and it was like all men, me, Christine, and maybe a couple, another woman or two, but I was like talking, I was like, I'm a hugger and, you know, I would hug each and every one of you.
But you know, they all really got a kick out of that. They all really like this.
I'll just start laughing. Yeah. I didn't see everyone's face, but I was just like, I'm so like, these boys need some like love, you know, like they need some like womanly influence. But yeah, so, and I'm proud of that, right?
You should be.
But yeah, so... Yeah, I never really felt the open arms with, you know, anybody I had meant, you know, back then with, you know, trying to step into recovery. Even when I called the hotline, I remember just getting drilled with questions and I was just like in this very vulnerable state. Again, it is what it is. They hooked me up with a therapist that was specific in gambling and recovery. This therapist was about 3 minutes from the casino. And just to give perception of where I live, you know, I live in between about 30 minutes on each side of me, these huge casinos. So it's not something that like super close to me, but like close enough for sure. But it's not like, you know, going there is making a little bit of an effort, right? It's not right down the road. So this therapist being right by the casino, like I'm making a trek out there. So I went, this guy told me that if I didn't stop gambling or if my husband didn't come with me, that we'd get divorced. That was like one of the first things he said to me. And of course I immediately got defensive, right? I was just, he's like, you're going to ruin your marriage if you don't stop gambling and all this stuff. And I was just like, whoa, red light. So that's the only thing I remember about that. Right. Cause it was, you know, I think, you know, during that time I was trying, I remember leaving there, going to the casino.
Right. 3 minutes away. This guy just pissed me off. What do I do when I'm pissed off? I gamble.
I mean, he just made me feel like complete crap.
Right. And you don't want to feel those feelings. So let's go ignore them.
And so then, so I missed one of the appointments. I believe I called. Can't remember. They sent me a letter and saying pretty much that I was fired from going there. And that if I wanted to go back, I had to do this, like these like makeup sessions. I'm sorry, but if you're going to help, if you're trying to help people, I'm being vulnerable enough, you know, to try to get that help. You're going to, oh my, what an experience. And I think about people, you know, my mom has always said this to me about therapy. You know, I've had some bad experiences and she's like, you know, how many, she's like, Lindsay, you know, I know that you'll try again. You know, because you believe in therapy and, you know, not everyone is a perfect match. She said, but how about those people who weren't, who that was their first experience and now they're ruined thinking therapy is crap, you know? So yeah, that was just a really, really, really terrible experience. And that was a long time ago. So anyways, my husband and I, you know, the last 7 years or so, ever since all of that, you know, we definitely have still been gambling. You know, we've been growing as a couple though. I think just kind of managing it. Stopping and going. We bought a house, you know, we have 4 animals, you know, we've progressed in our jobs, you know, so it definitely didn't seem as burdensome as it did before. But you know, it just was always there and it was always more me than him. You know, I can honestly say out of all the years, there was one time he was like, hey, do you want to go to the casino? And I was like, yeah, but every other time it was always me. You know, because I try not to always take the blame, right? Since we both would go, you know, because he's all, you know, he would be like, oh, well, you know, you're not in this alone. Like, we do this together. Because I would get really down on myself, like on the drives home, right? And hate myself and be so mad about all the money we spent. And he never really knew, you know, I never really was like, oh my God, this is what I'm doing. You know, I would tell him a little bit, but I wouldn't, you know, be like, okay, well, our mortgage isn't paid. The cars aren't paid. The credit cards, I took out this loan to pay this loan. And, you know, I think I was, you know, and I was in the money and he, you know, I'd give him like money to live throughout the week because he didn't have to pay any bills. And as long as he got money, I felt like that, you know, he was okay. Right.
And that's kind of what I wanted to revisit about is, you know, when you talk, like I was in the open with my gambling with my husband. That's what I kind of wanted, which you just kind of covered, that is how open were you with your husband? It's just like, he knew you were gambling. You both were gambling. But he didn't really know the financial impact. Do you think if he had known the financial impact, do you think it would have made a difference on your gambling habit together?
You know, when I really kind of broke down, I'd say probably a year ago or so, I kind of really broke down and told him, you know, the impact, because we have had so many bailouts, you know, of paying off, you know, bills and stuff. And he's fully aware of all that, you know. But so then I feel like we started working together with our finances, more of like communicating better. And like, I remember I'd be like, well, we haven't paid the mortgage. She's like, well, we're not going to the casino then. And I was like, why not? Like, what if we win more money? We'll be fine. And he's just like, no. And I'm just like, and I would always talk him into it. Such a manipulator. And, you know, yeah, I feel really bad about that. Just thinking about that, you know, I never really thought it impacted him a lot. I never have really felt, that's never been my first thought, because, you know, he would always gamble too. But now that I look back, it's like, yeah, if I would have been more upfront, I think it would have been different. But then again, I don't know.
But maybe not, because
yeah,
like I kind of had a similar situation with my husband. Like, he knew I was gambling, but he didn't know. It's like, I wasn't hiding that I was at the casino or anything like that.
Right.
But I wasn't upfront with him about our financial situation either. And so it's like, I kind of had the same struggles of like, I would tell him, you know, that we were behind on things and things like that. And I think his spending habits were just as bad as mine in different aspects.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was kind of a like, yeah, I should have been more upfront, obviously, but I was an addict and I was hiding. But yeah, so.
Well, and I always thought too, like, if I tell him exactly what's going on, he's not going to want to go. Stop.
Yeah. So of course you're going to hide it, right? Because you want to gamble, you want to get to the casino. I have a question about the exclusion and then the going back. So you mentioned that you excluded around 2015, 16, if I remember. So that was a lot of work. You went around to a bunch of casinos, mm-hmm. met with security, got your mug shut, as you called it, taken. And then
yeah,
what happened? Like, were these Vegas trips or did you unexclude? Is that a thing?
Yeah. So great question. I'm glad you brought it up because I really do want to talk about this more. Yeah. So I totally excluded. So there are the two big casinos. So there's one called Firekeepers. That was like my like kryptonite.
Or yes. If you're Superman, definitely. That's no. The word.
Yes.
Yeah. And I didn't go back there for a really long time. I'd say within the last couple of years, I had been risky enough to go walk back in that door. But for a long time, I was like, I can't go back. It's my kryptonite. Like, I can't walk in. They told me they'd arrest me. You know, I can't come anywhere near it. Da, da, da. There's another casino called Gun Lake, which is the other side of me. And their process was a lot different, right? They literally were just like, couldn't have cared less. They were just like, here's the paperwork, walked me out, done. And I don't remember, I know with the fire keepers one, it was like forever. You know, there wasn't a, like, I know some like do one year, 5 year, forever. And like fire keepers, from what I remember, is it was just like forever. Like you would have to reapply to be able to like be.
Because otherwise it's a trespassing charge.
Right. Yep. And you can, so they have like a hotel and they have like concerts and shows. Like you're not allowed to do any of that. You're not even allowed to come on the premises. So I abided by that for a long time. The other one close to my house, yeah, they just were so nonchalant about it. And I kind of felt like, well, they don't really care, you know? And I did abide by it for a long time. And then I got this like little risky devil on my shoulder one day. And I was, you know, and I was listening to like videos on YouTube and crap like that, you know, Googling if I went back, what would happen? And so many stories were like, well, just don't get caught or just don't win a jackpot. Right. So I take my husband, if I won a jackpot, he could just claim it. And that's how I got around it. Cause I did one, you know, I did, that did happen. So, you know, that was a slow progression too. And I, you know, I guess I never took it seriously because they never took it seriously that like I was excluded, right? Just the way they handled it in the beginning, I was just like, oh, you know, fire keepers took it really seriously. Like I talked to a cop, like, or something like that. You know, there were other casinos that are more like Indiana, and I like excluded from the whole state of Indiana. One of the casinos allowed me to do that. And that was a big process with the cop and everything. And they were very nice. And that was very serious. So I've never been back down there. Plus it's a lot further. But yeah, so it was mainly the one casino that couldn't have really cared less that I was excluded or not. Hmm. And then I didn't have a player's card. I didn't, you know, they took me off the mailing list and I didn't care about that. You know, I just wanted to be there, you know, and my husband could be kind of the face, right, of it. He was my out card. And that's the only, I think that's the only reason I ever felt comfortable doing it. So I don't know if this is proudly, but I can proudly say I never, ever gambled without him ever again.
Okay. So then he always knew every time you gambled after that.
Always. Yeah. And he knew how much we were spending too, because he was always around, right? And I think that's when it all started really, like the last year. So the last year it really started clicking, you know, but back to the exclusion thing, you know, if I won a jackpot, you know, he had to be around. And I literally, Tara, I would be sitting there, he'd be next to me. I would slowly slide out of my seat and he would slide right in. And one time, we won like 3 jackpots in one night and he had to claim all of them. And they were like, well, you're just lucky guy tonight, you know? So, you know, but it was so fluid because, you know, he knew I couldn't do it, right? And he wanted the money too. So, you know, at the very end, you know, when I started really contemplating all this and, you know, just so sick of living like this, I was kind of worried he was, starting to, you know, have a problem with it too. I started noticing some of those things that I did in him. And I was like, oh God, I have to save him from this too, you know, or I have to like, we can't do this anymore because we both can't have a problem, you know? Mm-hmm. We, you know, talked a lot about, you know, I don't know what, for 12 years, I was like, this new year, I'm going to stop gambling. Well, I was like 22 is it. And, you know, my husband kept saying that too. And, Yeah. So far it is. But yeah, the self-exclusion thing, you know, after now being in recovery and looking back at that, I think, wow, talk about being risky, right? You know, going over all of that, you know, I totally, if they weren't, you know, willing to work with me, I would have been arrested. So, you know, yeah, looking back and answering the, I think one of my first meetings, we talked about the 20 questions. And I know I've answered them, you know, or looked at them in the past. And I was like, well, I've never done anything criminally, you know, or, well, yes, I have.
Yeah, I used to say no to that one too. And then I realized how many times I floated a check overnight and I just happened to be, you know, I just happened to be able to come up with the money to get it in the bank. But technically I was check kiting and that's not legal.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of people don't want to associate themselves with that question, but I think probably more people that say no to that question should probably be saying,
oh, and
yes.
They ask you if you've ever
considered.
And there was lots of plenty of little schemes going on in my brain that I didn't act on that had I kept gambling, you know, and I'm talking like, oh, I could drive my car and like insurance fraud, right? I had thoughts of insurance fraud. I didn't do it, but I considered it. And so that question, my first meeting, I was like, no. And then, of course, as always happens in recovery, you get somebody who's a little further along the road with you. And like, I used to say no to that question, but here's what I realized. Like, oh, yeah, I definitely considered committing an illegal act to finance my gambling. I didn't do it, but I considered it. Those questions, it's funny how some of them flip from a no to a yes, the longer we're in recovery and we get new perspective on what's really underneath the question.
On everything in our life. Mm-hmm. I do want to kind of touch base on like that feeling that you get doing something you're not supposed to do though, right? Like going mm-hmm. into a place that we're banned
from. The rebel high.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a very true feeling. And I kind of like associate that with like a self-destruct kind of feeling. Like, when you first told me that months ago, mm-hmm. when we were talking and you first told me that, I was like, I could relate to that so much. Not that I have not even thought about stepping back into the casino since I've been, but just in different aspects of my life. But I've heard so many people talking about going back into the casino because it's like, they're not supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So kind of getting a high off of that.
Yeah. I mean, and after a while, you know, the first couple of times was super like, ooh, you know, and then it was just kind of like easy, you know, and
got away with it.
Yeah. But I think you're right. You know, I definitely think it adds to it. Cause I was trying to find, you know, a lot of my symptoms or reasons for gambling was I was bored. You know, I was bored with my life, with, you know, just not being where I wanted to be. You know, I don't have children. And, you know, now I wonder, do I not have children because I was gambling? Do I not have children for other reasons? You know, I was looking for so much excitement. I just felt, you know, and it was a reason for my husband and I to do something together. You know, we've always kind of struggled with finding things that we, you know, do together. You know, it's so easy to sit at different TVs and there are different areas in the house, right? You know, and this is something like Bonnie and Clyde, right? Like being risky together. It's exciting. So.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go ahead. And as we kind of like take it down, let's talk about what recovery has been like for you.
Yeah. So it's completely changed my life. In so many ways.
While you're thinking, as you talk about it, tell us the difference between, because you said it earlier, like I was practicing abstinence, not really doing recovery. So touch on that too.
Yeah, thank you. And that's something I learned from recovery, right? Is the difference. Because I didn't even realize that back then. And now it's like, whew, wow, what a difference. So recovery, you know, what I do is, you know, the podcast, The Broke Girl Society saved my life. I really, really think that, you know, not being dramatic, I've wanted for so long to stop, you know, and I never felt like I could. And until I heard, you know, a woman with the same struggles have those, it was just like something just like clicked and goes, you can, you know, you're not alone. And, you know, maybe this is your avenue, your connection to carry on, you know, and get through this. So, you know, just to list some of my tools is, you know, the podcast, and there's some, you know, there's quite a few now, you know, Tara's podcast and Christina's and Brian's, and there's so many more. And, that's how even I started my journey. I didn't stop gambling. I started listening to podcasts first, and then that gave me courage. And then to kind of reach out, share my story, join the group. And then, you know, after being in the group and attending like a meeting or two, you know, I really wanted more. I was really afraid to kind of go in person to GA again. You know, I'm not there yet, even still. I hope to get there. But, and then, you know, I found another, you know, another support group. And that's every day. And, you know, I don't go every day, but I try to go to as many as I can. And being able just to listen and relate and talk to people and being able to be in my pajamas and do that, you know, and not have to worry about driving there or being on time or anything, you know, because, or even just getting the energy to get out of the house to go, right? Especially when I'm feeling bad or sad or something. It's just changed everything, and connection is key. And, which I've learned. And, you know, even my best friend, I was telling her about all this the other day, and she's like, Lindsay, this has like changed your life. She's like, I mean, she's just so thrilled for me, and she just couldn't really believe it, you know? So yeah, the difference for me is, you know, all those years, you know, I think back and think I've been trying to recover for like 7 years. You know, I started this journey of like realizing the problem. Not wanting to address it. And I think that's, you know, where that abstinence came into play, where I was like, okay, I'm just going to stay away, but I'm not going to like, I thought going to therapy maybe was dealing with it, but like I had other issues too, I was dealing with, you know, I think we all do. I just never really, I always put the gambling on the back burner of like my problems, when all along, that was the problem.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I just, you know, all those years when I wouldn't go to the casino, I just stay away. I wasn't working on myself. You know, I was, but not like this, not like this. I wasn't connecting. I wasn't committing. You know, I'm like, I never not want to be in recovery again. Like, I want to be friends with you guys for the rest of my life. You know, I want to like be in this community forever, and I want to help others, you know, and that's like a passion of mine, is like, I want to be an advocate. I want to help others. And I've always wanted to get to that point. Right. And, but I always knew like, if I'm still gambling, I can't do that. Right. I might have this passion to want to quit, but so it's like this community, like just being able to relate to people is just, gosh, it's so life-changing. And, you know, there's so many, you know, I listen to so many things and try to stay really on top of just so many different perceptions of people, you know, because everyone's recovery is their own and different. And, but the common thread is you can't do it alone. And, you know, my family's wonderful, but, you know, and they will love me no matter what. But they don't know, you know, they don't know. They don't get it because they're not in it, you know. And they're grateful for you guys and for the community, because they're, you know, they're just like, I'm so glad you found it. So but yeah, I mean, it's as small as just like, you know, for me, like it's as small as just going to a meeting or, you know, listening to a podcast. That's recovery. You know, before I was just listening to true crime and trying to drown in my sorrows, you know? So.
Those connections just, that's really what was key for me in my recovery too. And in the early days, it was a lot of talking to sisters and brothers in recovery, just like learning like, oh, it's possible to actually have a life that you enjoy and things that you're proud of and not gamble and like not feel like you need to run away. I mean, gambling was truly a compulsion for me, but it became my one and only source of entertainment. Like I would turn down other forms of entertainment to go gamble. And I had completely lost a lot of connections, or the ones that I had, I was very fake and surfacey and like not really letting people in and not having any depth in those relationships. And so I think my recovery community really taught me that it's possible to have really deep and meaningful connections with people and talk about the hard stuff, and that you don't have to pretend that everything's okay 100% of the time. In fact, it's a lot better when you can look at your life like through a realistic lens and go, oh, do I want to keep this part of my life, or am I ready to work out a plan to change something? You know, I don't know. It's that connection is so key. I'm so glad to hear that you're developing those kinds of relationships, and I'm just excited to be, you know, I hope this lasts all our lives too. Like it's pretty cool to have met the way that we did. Like it's all virtual, and without COVID, I don't think any of that would have happened.
Yeah.
That it would have gotten as accessible. Recovery from gambling in particular, I don't think would have become as accessible as it is today without that event.
Yeah. I mean, that's a silver lining of COVID, I guess. Right.
Yeah, I think a lot more people are getting help because of the new ways that that recovery was forced to show up, you know, and that was
and therapy
the same way, a lot of telehealth. And and I do just kind of want to echo what you're saying with therapy. It's like sometimes it takes a minute to find the right therapist, and it's very, very important that that you relate to your therapist, and you got to remember they work for you. You don't work for them. So you know, they work for you.
That's a good point.
Sometimes I think they think it's the other way around, but it's not. It's not the other way around. Like sending you a letter like that, that's not how it works. And so it's very much, you have to go in with the mindset that they work for you. And if they're not putting in the work, or they're not making you feel like they're helping you, then it's time to move on and find another one. But there are some amazing therapists out there who want to help you. So yeah. So that.
Same thing with recovery, right? I mean, we've talked about this plenty of times. Like you can walk into one meeting and it's like, you have a really not so great experience and you don't get hugs. And then you can come to another meeting and it's exactly the right fit. I think the key, and Christina and I say this all the time, is like, just keep trying. Like you didn't find a therapist that works for you, but you got shit you need to unpack from the past. Keep trying. Same with recovery. You know, if you walk into a room and it's not the right room, keep trying. I'm trying smart tonight. I've never done that before, but thanks to our friend Kitty, I'm like, oh, I'm going to check that out too.
Yeah.
And I'm really comfortable in my 12-step recovery program, but I want to be familiar with all the tools that could possibly work for people. I'm so glad that you kept trying, Lindsay.
Thanks. Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
I'm glad you reached out to me and sent me that email. Like,
me too.
I tell, like we say all the time, like, I feel like we are a tribe of women who just want to help each other find recovery, but not just recovery, but just find a balanced life in general. To me, recovery and balance goes hand in hand. And, you know, for those of us who want to be doing this, working in this field for the rest of our lives, we very much have to make recovery our life. And I think everybody should make recovery their life. Then it's not like, it doesn't seem like such a tainted word.
Right.
You know, and, you know, thankfully I have somebody like Tara who's really shown me, you know, the difference of that. And it's benefited all of us, you know, to find the difference in that. And so, yeah, it's
like controversial. My controversial opinion about recovery, where I like come in and say the opposite of the recovery community is like, you got to put your recovery first. And I'm like, No, not first, like with, like it comes with everything. It doesn't have a priority order. It is with, you got 20 things on your list. Your recovery is just side by side with all those things. It comes with you in everything that you do, every decision that you make. It doesn't come first. It's right there all the time, like omnipresent. Yes.
You know, what's interesting about being in recovery now is I feel like a purpose for myself, right? You know how we always, like, I think everyone strives to find purpose in their life, you know, for others most of the time, you know, I don't know. But like before this, I felt like I, you know, I didn't have much of a social life. I didn't really do a lot, you know, I worked and that was about it. And it's like, I have like this full calendar of like helping myself. And like, that is like, that's been something huge for me, you know, like I feel so connected, even though it's virtually, that doesn't matter there. I mean, I see you guys more than, you know, people that I live, you know, my friends that live here, and that's okay. But like, I still feel connected. And, but like this, there's something to be said about like helping yourself, right? And doing these things to better yourself. And I always thought I was doing them before, and, you know, maybe I was in a different way, but not like now, you know? So, and I did want to say something too. I know, this is going really long, but about accountability and how recovery has really helped me be accountable. You know, I'll be honest, I've had, you know, I think about gambling every day, you know, in one way or another, not that I want to, but just think about it. And you know, I've had some urges and definitely some thoughts about like, you know, and then I think right back to you guys in the community and I'm like, no, what are you thinking? Like, you've come all this way. And I know that everyone would accept me if, you know, I did slip up or, you know, go back. But I don't want to, you know, like I'm able to now talk to myself. Before, I never, ever, ever could get it out of my head. I was going. That thought was planted. See ya. I never once was able to talk myself out of it. And now it's like liberating almost to be able to, it's not always right away, but it's like, I'm able to now like literally have a conversation, like in my head going, well, I want to go, but no, you can't go, you know? And so it's really great. And so, yeah, that's where recovery has helped me too, is just, no one is telling me not to go or to do this or to do that. They're, you know, they're just there to support me and help me stay accountable. And, in, you know, in all honesty, I don't want to come back and say, oh guys, guess what? You know, so.
You don't want that feeling on the drive home either.
No. Right. So, and, or even on the way there. I mean, I can't even tell you how many times I was on my way going, this is a bad idea. This is a bad idea. Oh, yeah. This is a bad idea. And my husband looks at me, he's like, do you want to turn around? And I'm like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we can all say we've had that experience. Like I've been driving through the parking lot. Like just, you haven't parked, just go. Like don't just drive out of the parking lot. You haven't parked yet. But it's just like my car would just magically find the parking spot right up front, which to me was like some magical sign that I was going to win that night. And I probably did win that night, but I lost it all. You know, cause I couldn't win, but yeah, definitely. I think our approach to recovery is definitely like, I've heard Tara say this to so many people, like you're going to have thoughts about it. Like, especially for as long as some of us have gambled and as long as it's been such.
That's what addicted brains do. They think about the thing they're obsessed with. This, of course you're going to think about it. Yes.
Yeah. So don't think that's wrong. Don't think that's wrong.
Do you ever hear like noises and think of the games you like used to play or commercials?
Oh, I can still, I'm 5.5 years from my last bet and I can still recall the music from the bonus on some of my favorite games. Like all I got to do is think about it. It's crazy town in my head.
It smells for me like in our local Walmart is just like literally 2 miles from the casino. And when I go in there, like I'll walk past somebody occasionally that has that casino smell. It's not a smoke smell. It's like a mix of like air freshener, smoke, oxygen.
and the buffet.
Like it's just, it has its own, like it has its own, like broken hearts is mixed in there. You know, like it has its own smell, it has its own smell. And it's like, I can walk past somebody and be like, I know where you've been.
I know where you were.
So it's just like, yeah, I've experienced that so much. And I'm just like, I don't know. And it's odd when I say that, but it's almost a comforting smell and it's sick.
Yeah.
So
I get that. Yeah, I understand. I think Vegas has that smell too, or the casinos there. A lot of the time walk into a bathroom and all of a sudden I'm like transported to like the Aria in Vegas. And I'm like, ugh. Yeah.
Or certain like hotel carpet.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, that just goes to show how much it affects our brains and it ingrains in us, you know, because it's like, I feel like sometimes that those feelings and those smells and those things have replaced like certain memories of when I was younger, like, but I'm starting to remember those things more, if that makes sense. Like I used to always just think about these memories I had with my grandmother. I was having this conversation with somebody not long ago about like just hanging out in the kitchen and cooking with her and like all her cute little hand sewn aprons that she always wore, which I now have. And, cause she passed, 14 years ago. And sometimes it's like, I feel like those casino memories and emotions just kind of wiped out some of those really heartfelt, not wiped out, but just were laying on top of some of those really heartfelt memories that I would rather be remembering. Mm-hmm. And so I've noticed now that some of those things are like, that fog is starting to clear and some of those memories are coming back to me. And so I think that's probably been one of the most interesting parts for me recently. Did you experience much of that, Tara?
I think I still am. It's almost like there was, you know, there's dust on top of the memories. Yeah. And some of those memories, good and bad, right? So my earliest part of my recovery, a lot of it was unpacking the stuff that I was afraid to feel. Now there's more and more of this contrasting, like, oh, remember that really cool, fun thing that happened in your life or that joyful experience? I think in my gambling days, I was so focused on my suffering that's like all my brain, it was like, it just wanted to mute it. Right. So then it was muting everything, the good and the bad. And yeah, it's interesting because I'm also getting older. Right. So I'm like, are these real memories? I gotta like double check with someone in the family or in my friend circle. Like, did this really happen in 91 when we had that snowstorm? In Minnesota, we had like a famous Halloween snowstorm in 1991. And I had this memory this year. I was like, did that really happen? And I was like, yeah, it did. We're skitching on the, I don't even know if that's a word anyone who doesn't get lots of snowfall uses, but we were hanging onto the back of somebody's pickup and truck and just sliding on our feet down the street when plows hadn't been out. And I just remembered it. I'm like, wow, I totally forgot that happened. It's like funny, silly memory.
Yeah.
Having a good old time.
Very much so. I'm the Southerner of the trio here. And that's not a word here, but
yeah. Kitchen. Do they use that word in Michigan?
I don't know if I've ever heard that. But that sounds really fun.
It does. I was thinking that too. Yeah.
Probably the word we made up. I have no idea. Yeah, you probably don't know that about me. That used to be pretty into like 4x4s and mudding.
I love all that stuff.
Whipping shitties, donuts, whatever.
Yeah, we had a dune buggy growing up. That was super fun. We go head up north. And yeah, that was good times.
All right, ladies, let's go ahead and close this down. And I just want to say thanks to Lindsay for coming on. And I think these early recovery conversations are so important. Because I did one time on this one podcast, and it really just kind of set the pace for what recovery felt like for me. And so I think it's so, so important to have them. And I appreciate you coming on and being vulnerable.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you both so much. And, you know, I thank you for like like paving the path for us, you know, like of just, I look up to you both so much and, you know, I couldn't do this without you. So thank you.
For sharing your story. And for those of you who do not know, it is Problem Gambling Awareness Month in March. And I think there's not a lot of women talking about gambling publicly. So really glad to be adding your voice and grateful to Christina for bringing more and more female voices to the podcast waves, if you will, as an example of what it's like to be connected to other women in recovery from this addiction. And I'm going to put a plug in for Christina's group because she doesn't do it that often, so I'm going to do it. If you are not already involved in the Broke Girl Society Facebook group, check it out. We have started meeting regularly, having our own recovery meetings, and it's been a unique experience and a lot of women-only safe conversations. So if you're not in there and you're looking for a women-only space, feel free to join us.
Yeah, thanks for that. I don't know why I don't do that, but I will put a link in the show notes. So, all right. I'm Christina.
I'm Tara.
And we'll catch you next time.